Imagine tapping into the mind of someone who's been investing in property for 25 years. Hi, I'm Jared Krause. I'm the co-host of the Property Powers Australia podcast. And in this episode, Sam and I chat to Lisa Happ from Personalized Property Professionals, who has been in property investing for 25 years with her husband, Brian, where they've built a property portfolio that includes 17 leases and a value of $7 million. They now work as professionals, buyers, agents at personalizedpropertyprofessionals.com. You can check that out. There'll be links to the show notes. And in this pod, Sam and I chat to Lisa about the incredible portfolio they've built, the types of properties they have within their portfolio and what purpose they serve and how they actually work for them. We also talk about what rooming houses are and how they can make you great cash flow in your property portfolio. We also discuss the mindset that you need to have for buying your next property investment so you can ensure you don't stunt your property portfolio growth. We also discuss how to choose the best property buyers agents for you, your goals, and where you're at to actually attain the property portfolio that you're desiring. Now, before we dive into the pod, this is not the only way that we can help you for free. We do have our How to Maximize Your Borrowing Capacity mini course. You can get that at propertypals.au/resources. Now, let's dive in and have a chat with Lisa. Welcome to Property Pals, the podcast where we share everything around how to build a property portfolio, from researching areas, financing, structuring, buying, selling, and reinvesting to live a life of financial independence. As a disclaimer, any information shared by myself, Jared, Sam, and the Property Pals team is strictly general and should not be taken as constituting professional advice. You should consider seeking independent legal, financial, and taxation advice from a qualified professional.
Rightio, Property Pals, and we've got Lisa Happ here. How are you going, Lisa?
I'm good. How are you, Sam and Jared?
I'm really good, thank you.
Lisa is someone that I've been wanting to get on the podcast for a long time now, and we've had some interesting sort of discussions in the past, and Lisa's a very experienced buyer's agent and has a really great portfolio, like a diverse portfolio that I want to pick her brain on, just because like there's so many different strategies that people are, you know, getting thrown at them. Like they go through their journey of, oh, I want to be a property investor. And then you're just getting bombarded from all these different media channels as to try this strategy. And to find someone who has such a broad, vast of experience, I think would be good to, get your knowledge on here, Lisa, and hopefully share some education for people to, you know, help make their decision-making even easier. So yeah. I guess the first question I'm always, I'm curious about is, you know, Let's talk about these types of properties that you've purchased in the past or that you own your portfolio at the moment. Well, I know that there's a good array, so do you want to rattle them off? But I guess, in regards to podcasting, let's start off with a little bit about you, Lisa. Sorry, I'll jump the gun on that one because I'm excited about this one.
I'd love to know. Yeah, thanks, Sam. That's a good one. I'd love to know, like, why did you get into property investing, Lisa? Like, what got you to Why property?
I think it started off when I was growing up because my father was a fisheries inspector in New South Wales, and we got moved around a lot. And through his work, we were given whatever house we had to go to in that location. So my parents had never owned their own home until quite late in their journey, and seeing that always wanted me to have that security of a property. And a house that I could call my own. So I started quite young. My father passed away, gave me $2,000, I think it was, which I was working full-time at that time in my 20s, and decided I had enough to put a deposit on a house and bought an old place in Mayfield East in Newcastle, basically. And, yeah, that was my start.
Cool.
Was it a good start? How did it go? What was the first experience?
Just say the growth in Mayfield East at that time was when the BHP was starting to shut down, and that whole area just boomed. So, you know, within 2-3 years, it tripled in price.
Wow.
I sold that when I then moved down to Victoria and married Brian, And we basically sold that property. This was a beach house bachelor kind of pad, which we renovated ourselves as owner Oc, paid off the mortgage, and then moved on to into investing after that.
In case anyone's wondering who's Brian, he's the other half of Personalised Property Professionals, which is the buyer's agency. And if you're ever down Bell's Way and you want to go for a surf, you've got to get Brian's permission because he's the OG local on the Bell's Point Break, I'm told.
I think him and his mates, yeah, but yes.
Yeah, that's
we're pretty weird. Close to Bell's, put it that way.
Yeah, it's good neck of the woods. But, I guess that... my first investing journey is you see the power of it, right? Like, what was your first thoughts when you saw that compound so quickly? Were you like, you know, what was the first thing that came to your mind of that first property in Newcastle?
It was funny because I wasn't even thinking of selling it in that stage, and it was like, oh yeah, you know, this is this little property. I did a bit of work on it. It had like it was one of those old style ones. It even had the toilet outside in a little shed kind of thing. It was like that's how old it was. But to see that growth happen when we went back and just thought, you know, let's just get an appraisal done on it. It was pretty inspiring to see what could happen with property within timeframes if you pick the right locations. And obviously it was a bit of a fluke. I mean, I was living in Newcastle at the time, and I did think that with BHP closing down, that area had to do something, like it had to be better. It was actually an area you wouldn't normally buy in. So it was just, I suppose, that thinking of what areas or what would help the areas to increase, and why would people want to actually buy there or rent there as well.
Yeah. And from small things, big things grow. What have you grown into in your portfolio now? And what's I guess that was my initial jump the gun question of the properties that you've purchased and what's in there now?
Yeah, so the next one was what people do, which was probably one of our mistakes at the time. We bought locally, so we bought in Torquay, which was buy a bit of land, you know, and put a house, Metricon house on it, like people try and do. And we thought we were property investors and we were on our way. Little did we know that just stuck us down totally because there was no growth happening at that time in Torquay. And we just had nowhere to go. So we had to sit for a bit. But I think learning through that now is, you know, one of the things that we can give back to people if they come on the journey with us is what not to do and when not to do it. So, you know, we didn't have enough education, et cetera, so it made us then go and get that education that we needed to probably become more educated investors instead of just jumping in off the gun, which is what we originally did. So yeah, we did that. We had to sit for a little bit. We then decided to go interstate. So one of our thinking has always been where will people want to rent or where will people, you know, that are in good locations. So our next one was up in Queensland next to Noosa. So Sunshine Beach, a little unit, block of three units, et cetera, like that. And we were able to, that one's yeah, gone through the roof as well. So really looking at those growth areas and why people would want to, or need to rent in those kind of areas. Then we bought a dual income one in Crescent Head, so going back into New South Wales again.
Good sales spot too. Hey?
Yeah, you'll notice the theme going on, which is you know, Coast places line. That we go to holiday. Like everyone says, don't you know, like what do you do when you go on holiday? You always look at properties. And yeah, we actually have done that. So in a fair bit of our journey, but yeah, so Crescent Head. I think from there we bought and sold a property after that, which was we actually went with a buyer's agent and was one of our worst mistakes out because they didn't actually find out probably enough about us and what we wanted and how quickly we wanted to move with that growth. So we bought and sold within that time frame and got more education as well. So that's when we kind of turned it around a bit and started going, we need income. And we went into rooming houses. So COVID came and we couldn't obviously get out of Victoria. As people know, we were kind of stuck here no matter what. We were trapped. So we were able to, through a company, which is Inagardie, we got a rooming house, which bought, converted, etc. So that's 5-bed, 5-bath micro apartments, and that's in Brisbane City Council. So we were, through this time, so that's probably 2 years we'd been getting educated within that, that's like, theme of rooming houses. So there's a lot of legalities behind it. There's a lot of things you can and can't do. So it's really important not just to jump in and go, oh, I'm going to go rooming houses without that kind of education or knowledge, because, you know, you've got to do it properly. It's not a slum lord kind of aspect. It's looking at the client, the kind of clients you want, which is good professionals who need need some kind of accommodation in those areas. So that property is a 5-bed, 5-bath, like I mentioned, Brisbane City Council. It's never been, we've always had tenants in from day dot, basically, from when it was converted. So it's just a nice, easy one sitting there. As you will probably would know, through Brisbane, the growth that's happened in that Brisbane area has just gone huge. So straight away we bought just before that. Before that rise. So basically within 6 months, the growth had happened for us. So we just kind of bought in that right kind of period.
Sweet spot,
yeah. Then from there, we converted our Torquay property, which wasn't going well. So our original, you know, property that we loved, into a 6-bed, 6-bath micro apartment property as well.
That's the one that Darren and I went through, yeah?
Yeah, yep. So that's the one that you've seen as well. So. So you can see that kind of set out of what it is. It's, you know, they've got their own little areas that they can have, but then just a communal kitchen and a communal area that they can kind of come into as well. So then Brian calls it, well, Brian said, that's it, no more prop. Oh, no, actually, we have one more. So the other one after that was the accidental commercial property that we bought.
Accidental commercial. I like that.
Do you like that one?
Yeah.
So this was up as just a straight resi property, and I'd started looking around the Ipswich area, thinking that might be an area that will have a bit of growth. This is going back into 2021, and this resi property came up, and I went, oh, that's an interesting one, because it had two, like we always look at something a bit different. So this one had two properties on it. So one was an old Queenslander, and in the back was a commercial hairdresser. And I went, oh, that sounds all right. That sounds pretty good. And we purchased that property, you know, for, I think it was like 480K, something like that. And then we found out it actually had commercial leases for both areas.
Oh, amazing. So,
yeah, so it's dual commercial income on one property.
Wow.
So that one is probably like a little mistake that's kind of gone okay.
Yeah, and so you could like subdivide or strata title two different
not with how it's kind of situated. We probably could do something, but yeah, it's a good size block, but the block is sloping. It's not really like there is potential there for down the track if we wanted to, but at the moment it's kind of like getting two good tenants in there and just leaving it and forgetting it, like all outgoings with commercial, you know, all that kind of aspect that we don't have to worry about. So it's just a nice income that, you know, down the track when we retire, that income will actually be quite nice for us to live on. So, you know, that's one of our ones we're planning on keeping. I keep getting the old real estate agent who sold it to us saying, oh, would you like to sell it? And I said, yeah, but we'd be selling it as a commercial, not a residential. So
absolutely. Also, wow, Lisa, congratulations. Like, that's quite a portfolio. That's really cool. And you've got a good blended mix. It sounds like you've got some properties that you bought at start for capital growth, and you went into two, you know, rooming facilities, and then you've got a commercial, two, like double commercial now. That's awesome.
Is there another commercial on the way, or we're trying to?
Yeah, so we've just bought a commercial in our SMSF. So,
oh, great.
You keep going. What's next?
And you forgot my other one in Bundy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Brian told me, that's it, no more properties. And I said, okay, yep. And then I saw this little gem up in Bundaberg, which we'd gone on the, you know, we went and looked at Harvey Bay, Bundy, and we did a bit of a trip up there anyway. and I quite like Bundy. And I went, all right, yes, darling, I won't buy anything. And then he came home and I was like, guess what I just did? And he went, what? And I went, I bought a property. Oh, actually, we bought a property. And he went, what do you mean? And I said, look at this. It's such a good property. And I said, so we bought it for 175K. It's over 800 square meters. It's in Bundy. It's flood free. It had an old Queenslander on it, but in a good location so that we could actually, put a dual OC on there basically or anything like that. And I said, we can just build, we can knock it down. Like it's only land value. And then we did a trip up there and had a look at the property and it's like so solid. So we've actually now put a new roof on it, paid probably 30K up fixing it up, and we're getting rent now for 450 out of it. So
What's it worth now though?
I reckon it's now worth about 350.
Oh, you're being so conservative.
Sam knows Bundy very well. He's been looking in those areas, I think.
Oh, have I got a property for you?
Oh, actually, is that the corner block that's on the market at the moment?
No.
Okay. There's a good one on the market. But anyway.
I've got a question, Lisa. I think about it when people listen to this podcast and like, wow, Lisa has crushed it, and you have. You and Brian have done so well, and I'm just curious on the time frame of like from when you bought your first property with that 2K that you deposit that you got from your dad, and then to sort of this Bundaberg property that you bought. Like, what's that time frame roughly?
Yeah, so that first property, so talking about 25 years.
Yeah, cool.
All up. Yeah. So like I said, we got stuck when we bought that house and land in Torquay. So that kind of stuck us for a couple of years, but we weren't just sitting and going, oh, we can't do a thing. We actually got education during that time frame to go, all right, well, what can we do? How can we get ourselves out of this? Or what is going to be our next step now when we finally, get that income kind of coming in, all that growth to be able to do it. So I think one of the good things obviously was that we were able to have our own property paid off, our PPOR. Which helps, but there is ways of doing stuff as well, like of moving, and you just have to change your strategies a bit to make sure that you can move forward. But one of the biggest things that we work with our clients is making sure that we don't get them stuck, so that we actually look at that strategy moving forward and going, well, actually, no, you can't buy this amount of property without this kind of growth or without this kind of income, because that will actually, the banks won't let you borrow anymore to buy that next property that you want to buy. So it's really important to make sure that when you're working with clients that you don't just go, oh, we're just going to buy this property because we can. It's actually looking at that next step. It's not this step, it's the one after, to make sure that they can keep moving.
Yeah, and that goes into my other question is, like, you've got residential, you've got rooming house, you've got commercial properties, you've got, even development plays in the future. What would be, like, from a person who's just looking to, build a semi-passive portfolio and just enjoy the ride as much, like, after all this experience and education, where do you sort of, find more comfort in the best opportunity for investors at the moment in the market?
Yes, I think, are you talking about if people are just starting off with their journey at this stage on where they
are? Yeah. I mean, like, there's the income play. I mean, I'll break it down a little bit more. Like, rooming house, there's a lot of education and you've done a lot. Like, there's years and years of experience that you've accumulated over time. It's not a simple, just buy it and do it to anything. There's a lot more risks involved, why it's important to have someone like yourself to guide them through that process. Is the rooming play something that you're still passionate about, or are you more of a, commercial person now? What's sort of that mindset?
Yeah, look, I think it's important to have the mixed strategy, because one area might go boom for a bit and then it's off the track, or the government might play their cards and change the rules around how you can operate certain aspects of it as well. So you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, which is why that diversity is really important. I think one of the things when you look at rooming is that there's a lot more expenses. The risk is a lot lower in some senses because you've got like six leases in that property in Torquay, not just one. So if one moves out, you've still got five paying. So the risk there in that sense is a lot more diverse as well. But the expenses are all on us. So in other words, we pay for all the water, we pay for all the electricity, we pay for the internet, you know, we pay to have the gardens done, we pay to have the cleaning on the communal areas done as well. So the expenses are a lot more than a straight rental to one person. But right. the income is a lot better, and then the risk is a lot more diverse as well. So it's just that I suppose the options is a lot more like that. With commercial, you know, you could have it vacant for 3 months until you get a good commercial tenant in. But once you get that tenant in, you could have them for 6-7 years, where, you know, a normal tenant in a normal house, you might only hold for 3 years. So it's just that diversification and making sure that you don't have all your eggs in one basket would be my suggestion, and seems to have worked quite well for our portfolio and moving forward.
Yeah, that's dealing with clients that come on, and they get really caught up in, like, well, this is my first investment, and like it feels like they're thinking this is going to be their only investment. And when you're going down this play, it's like I say all the time, there's no perfect property. There is, you know, somewhat of a perfect portfolio to balance for your personal situation. I think that's, like, you're a perfect example of that. Is if you're going into this, for anyone that's listening, and you want to be a property investor, you know, don't go in it with your one and done. Otherwise, you're not giving it full attention, and then you're going to get caught up in analysis paralysis. And, you know, the true successful investors aren't just buying one stock, one property. You know, it's the diversification that you mentioned is really key. What do you reckon, Jared?
Yeah, I like that. I like it so much. And I also, adding to what you said, Lisa, is the way I think about when you're buying a property, say somebody's buying a property now and they're like, okay, I'm going to buy this property investment. If you want to build a portfolio, I don't think it's worth thinking about that, you know, just buying that one in property investment. I think it's worth thinking about how do you get the next one as well, and what is the next one going to be, in terms of, like, if you buy a resi property, or you're buying your second or third or fourth resi property, and it's going to be for capital growth, and you have your structures in place so you can get financing for the next one, then you think about, like, what's the next additional property that I need to get after I buy this one I'm buying now, and how do I make sure I buy the right one that can get me to the next one versus, like, just freaking, like, just, I mean, I get when you're buying your first property. I knew that when I was buying my first property, I was like, I want a big property portfolio. And I think a lot of people are thinking about that. It's like, I want a passive income of 100K or 200K or whatever it is. But don't get too caught up, like you said, Sam, in that first one. Think about that next sort of, how do I get into that next one, and what is that next asset going to be? And Lisa, I'd love to pick your brains on that. How do you help people with that? Like, is it with making sure they get their financing and structuring right, or is it making sure they got the right property that can propel them to that next one? Like, what are the things that you mention and suggest to your clients?
Yeah, I think it's building that team around you. So it's not just a buyer's agent. It's also making sure you have a good accountant who is a property accountant as well, who knows all the tricks, or not the tricks, but, you know, knows that side of things really well. So, you know, everything about, okay, well, we need to get a depreciation schedule. You know, who do you get that from? You know, depending on how old the property is, you know, looking at what we can actually get on or not do, having a good broker or to find out, you know, where I can go and talking to them. Like, I don't want to go just this property, I want to go to. So what is my limit on this one? You know, what else do I need? We also use a system called Game Plans, which is a strategic kind of system. So we can put the data into that to also help them work through what they can and can't do moving forward as well. So I think there's a lot of different tools out there that people can use, but it's getting them the right people around them who are thinking property so that they can actually move forward correctly as well.
Case by case, Jared.
I love it.
Yeah, well, it's really, really sage advice on that front. And, I mean, this is a question that I get all the time. Like, obviously, you get the first-time investors, they want to build that portfolio. You know, the barrier to entry for commercial is obviously deposits, right? Like, from what I understand, but then the cash flow is really strong. You know, are you seeing that residential is always that sort of, you know, first step, or, you know, you've got a lot of experience in your end? You know, what's your sort of mindset around that after everything that you've learned over the years?
Yeah, look, I think for an investor, unless they already know commercial law or have had experience within that area, you know, you'd be looking at for a first property for somebody, a straight buy and hold, looking at that growth potential to give them then that equity to pull out to then move again. So you're needing to build a nice solid base. Like originally on your first one, you know, your other thing we haven't talked about, trust and that, but you know, your original couple of first properties, et cetera, you'd buy in your own name to try and, you know, work through as much tax you can. But then from there, you've got to also think about land tax. You've got to think about other aspects. So buying in a trust that can then, you know, you can move either the losses or the gains around within the trust to, you know, at the end, hopefully become out at least even, if not ahead a little bit. But, you know, it's all about that playing that game with your tax as well. So, you know, that's just also the next step. So, you know, at originally though, just a nice straight buy and hold property that has a good yield, that has good capital growth that you can move then onto your next property.
That's nice. We've got a bit of a I don't know what you call it, Jared. Like, there's the buyer's agent industry it's somewhat new. I mean, it's been around for sort of 20 years in Australia, but you've come through and you've obviously, you know, very experienced and very extremely educated, put it that way. Like, what, like, to help people to listen to this, like, to find a good buyer's agent, in my opinion, like, it's very challenging. Like, in every industry, there's good, there's bad, and there's rubbish. I used to use a different word, but now I call it rubbish. You know, what are some things that you, like, you've, you know, learnt to, I guess, what's your advice on people that are thinking about going down the buyer's agent path and what to look for in a good BA?
Yeah, look, I think depending on, you know, what you're wanting, like some people are going to want more hand-holding, et cetera, and to know the process going forward and probably to also help with education. Some might just be happy to go, no, you just do it all and just tell me and just buy it. So depending on how much input people would want. But I think the main thing is to go in asking a set of questions, and if they can't answer those questions, that would be a red flag for me immediately. The person that I would talk to, I'd be asking if they've actually ever purchased property themselves for themselves as well. So what kind of buy-in have they got, or is it just a job? You know, if it's just a job and they're just wanting the end outcome, then is that also the right thing for the client? There's a lot of people out there who pay a lot of money to be good marketers. and I was trying to think of the right word. Is that really the kind of buyer's agent that you want either? If you go into some of these bigger companies, you're not really dealing with the head person. You'll be dealing with, you know, their fourth, fifth, sixth, or 20th person. So do you know who you're going to be in contact with every single time that you ring up? Or is it just a different person bringing something up on the computer and reading notes from it? So how much are they invested in your whole, you know, start to finish on your property journey as well? So, you know, I've seen some buyer's agents, and it's like, because I actually help sometimes some of the buyer's agents find property because they just either can't do it or they've got too many on the books. So some of the times I'm hearing, I just need to get this person off my books, and I don't like that. I don't like that kind of attitude. That's probably a big no for me. But some people take on too many clients as well, and they can't actually service them. Or they take on, like, they might have four clients in the one area that they're looking for at the one same price. So it's like, well, who are you going to give this property to? But they don't seem to care. So the ethics, I think, sometimes on the buyer's agent aren't the correct one. And it's looking at, why are they in the business? Are they in the business just to make money, or are they in the business to help people through their property journey? Well, so that's the difference.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you, Lisa. I think that it's, and I'll put my hand up and say that I was this person at the start when I was starting in my business. Is like, I started my business to make money so I didn't have to do my regular job as a plumber. And I was just like trying to make money. Obviously, I've got ethics and I was doing the best service that I could. In fact, like, providing a far better service than, you know, as we scale, you do lose some serviceability when you're not as close to the client. And I think that most people, like, now that you've got these, like, marketers out there marketing, become a certified buyer's agent and you can make X amount of money per month, people are like, damn, I stuffed my job, I'm going to do this, and I just want to make money, and that's what they're in it for. And the ones that, I guess there's the ones that survive are the ones that do put the service, the best service forward. And then, yeah, I want to ask as well, Since you guys are both have been buyer's agents and, you know, worked in this buyer's agency space, how did you guys, Lisa and Sam, meet?
Oh, yeah, good question. Lisa, you jump in. You tell me the story.
Okay, so I was originally a TAFE teacher and got a redundancy through TAFE. So at that stage, I was just like, okay, what am I going to do now? But before that, I kind of saw the writing on the wall a little bit, and I'm like, what can I do? And I just happened to have a call about from BAI, which is Ben Handler, which is a buyer's agent institute. So I jumped onto his course, got my real estate license, and had that kind of sitting in the background. If nothing else, I thought it was more education for me, and the more I knew about the real estate industry, and the more I knew about, you know, going through his course, again, was just more education for me. But then I got the redundancy and happened to know Scott Agate through some of the stuff that I'd been doing originally. And I jokingly said to him, oh, you haven't got a job for me, have you? And he said, actually, I might have. And so I came on board to Hello House at that stage because it was an education kind of platform. My background as a TAFE teacher kind of fitted in nicely with that as well. So did some work there, and Sam was working there as well. So that's how we kind of met in that sense. So I stayed with Hello House for a year until they changed direction a bit, and then went off on my own with the buyer's agent, last year.
Congratulations. Yeah, I had some really good conversations with Lisa in the office, and I don't know, I think we align very similarly, like morally and ethically. And I mean, like, I was just blown away by what Lisa and Brian had built as a portfolio. And then, that's why when we went down to Melbourne, it was good to see Lisa and Brian. Unfortunately, Bells wasn't pumping, but we got to see your rooming house, which is really interesting. I'm sort of intrigued on that. But I just think that the service that you and Brian provide and what you've sort of built is very interesting for people to go into. Because, like, I guess it's probably the right time to ask. Is like, what actually, like, how have you positioned personalized property professionals different to all these other buyers agencies that are coming out in Australia?
Yeah, so I suppose one of the things is that we actually have a limit on how many clients we'll take on. So we'll only have 3 clients maximum at the same time. So we're not looking at this massive kind of business. We're looking at making sure, you know, like the name says, it's personalized. So the idea is that we'll take them from start to finish. I am their main contact through the whole way. Brian jumps in and out, but, you know, he's got his full-time job. But they can ring me. They've got my mobile number. They'll know that I will be the one answering, and so I'm not passing it off to a VA or to somebody else. And I take them through that whole stage from start to finish. So I think that's what it is. It's kind of unique a bit in that sense that it is going to be a personalised service one-on-one with me, with Brian coming in on some strategies and some other options that we've got. As you know, Sam, Brian and I argue quite a bit. So, you know, it's not, you know, I haven't got just one person. Like, if he's not comfortable with what I'm saying, he'll tell me, you know. So one of the things also is that I always say, if I wouldn't buy that property myself, I'm not going to buy it for a client. So it's got to go through my DD, which is quite huge. And if I don't like a property, I'm not going to just put it to the client. Like, I've had with one of my clients, they're saying, why don't we go for that one? I said, nah, we can do better. And they're going, but we didn't mind that one. I'm going, yeah, just trust me. And then at the end, when we bought the property, they went, now I understand. Like, we had better yield, it was lower price, it was a better property, et cetera. So, you know, it has to go through both mine and Brian's DD before it goes to the client as well. So it's got those extra kind of steps in place. And Brian and I love arguing about property. So, you know, it just keeps us in the game.
I think you guys are the most active on the social, some of these social platforms. You're always in the webinars and listening and commenting. I see that quite regularly. You can just see it's a passion, you know, and that's the hard, like, as you know, you both pointed out, it gets to a stage where, you know, property, we all get into property because we want to, you know, create money. And then there's those that, you know, get sort of more pulled away from that, you know, the purpose to help people and go into, you know, the financial gain out of it. But I just think that longevity, you know, it's good to sort of, you know, do the best by the people that you're servicing because it comes back, you know, tenfold in the future. And that's what I've sort of learned over my 35 years of life, which isn't too long.
It's a really beautiful thing that you have built, Lisa, because unlike a lot of people that are starting out maybe as buyer's agents, you know, they're in a rush and, you know, they're like, oh, I'm like, I need to retire by a certain date and I need X amount of money. But you've already done the work and, you know, 25 years in property, you've got quite a substantial property portfolio and you're not, doesn't seem like you're pressed for like, I need to make a lot of money right now or I need to work myself out of a job. You actually like genuinely, I can tell that you genuinely love the property space and you want to do the right thing for people. So yeah.
Tell me, Lisa, Brian and I were having a chat about a week or so ago. What's explain the dream. Cause I like the buyer's agent. What you guys are working towards is cool. Like with the caravan, like just boots on the ground. Yeah. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, so our end goal is basically we're on our exit strategy. Like Brian has already said, no, we're not buying any more property, which is also why, like, I love buying property and I love that kind of aspect, which is why the buyer's agent means I can still buy property. Like I still, if I go in negotiating or whatever, I still think it's my property that I'm buying, even though I'm buying it for a client. So I still get that, you know, the same kind of feeling as what I had when I bought the other properties as well. So that's always nice. So yeah, our idea is to sell down some of our properties to move forward. But what our in a couple of years, Brian's going to potentially retire or go onto that edge to retire. So our idea is that we will look at the growth with a growth area within Australia. And we're going to take our caravan, which is being set up now for us to be able to work fully on the road. And we'll go into that area and stay there for a month or 3 weeks or whatever it is to actually get to know that area properly, work with the agents and work with our clients while we're actually situated in that area. So if the next boom area is WA or whatever, we'll take the van, go across to WA, plonk ourselves down there for a while. No doubt we'll also head up to Nauru for a surf or something. But, you know, or if it's South Australia, we'll head across to South Australia and position ourselves in that area to actually get to know the area, to get to know the agents, to work with them and do it properly. So we're not just sitting behind a computer. But it just means it can take us away anywhere around Australia, depending on what those growth areas are, so that we can actually check it out ourselves and know for our clients. I mean, we've done a bit of it already. Like we did a trip up because we're surf club based and, you know, we kind of go places for Aussie titles or whatever. And then, you know, we headed up to Townsville last year and Brian flew home and I just drove the caravan back into places that I wanted to check out and stay in. So I stayed, you know, a week in Townsville, a couple of days in Mackay, you know, Gladstone, Rocky, Bundy, etc. like that. So just those kind of options, I suppose, to be able to work on the road and set yourself up properly so that you go and do the boots on the ground and actually find the areas. I usually do a map of the areas and the areas that I'm comfortable buying in and not. So when I come back home, then I know where to go and where not to.
Mm. Yeah, highly valuable. There's only so much you can get out of the data. But I think that's cool lifestyle. Like it's, you're not driven by, you know, just the financial aspect, but obviously, you know, it's a great thing that you can do for somebody and you can, you know, make people a lot of money. So you deserve to get paid for that service. As long as the value that you give far out weighs the expense is sort of my philosophy. But yeah, I think those regions you mentioned, you battled off, I mean, they're pretty key hotspots at the moment. Regional Queensland and Queensland are some interesting places to invest. But where can we find more about you, Lisa, you and Personalised Property Principles?
Yeah, so the website, obviously, which is www.personalisedpropertyprofessionals.com. My email address, lisa@personalisedpropertyprofessionals.com. Or my phone number, 0411-341-324.
Geez, Jared, we've got a lot of P's in this as well.
We do.
We've got the Personalised Property Professionals, Property Pals podcast. God, I need to get better with my articulations.
Yeah, it was also pretty a lot of P's with Polizzi Property, and there's so many P's in property, and I love it. Passive income. So good.
Lisa, yeah, thank you so much. We just shortened to the three P's.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your time, Lisa. Also, I'm very grateful that we got to come and meet you in person. I think it might have been 2 years ago now, down in Torquay, and go through your place. I really appreciate that experience too. So, yeah, thanks for coming on and having a chat with us.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.